Hi, this is Michael Uslan. You're listening to Batman on Film.
I'm vengeance.
I have given a name to my pain.
Kill
the Bat of Gotham.
I'm Batman.
Hello, Bat Family, and welcome to this episode number 180 of the Batman on Film podcast. BOF is the sponsor and a proud member of the Batman Podcast Network. Check out all of the shows over at batmanpodcastnetwork.com and follow us on Twitter at batpodnetwork. I'm Garrett Grev. Thank you for listening. If you would be so kind to rate and review the podcast, I'm going to go ahead and read it on air because I think maybe you'd like to hear it. Maybe that could be fun. So we've got a new review that came in from Grain Belters. Grain Belters says, enjoyable group, great Batman content. He says, I'm no Batman superfan, but I did watch a lot of it as a kid. I've enjoyed all of the movies since and was pleasantly surprised how enjoyable this podcast is. At first, I thought it wouldn't be for me. He's wrong. But guys like Garrett, guys like Garrett, keep it interesting and the entire group seems very relatable. Check it out, even if you were on the fence. It might be something you end up liking. First, let me introduce. Thank you, Grain Belters. I appreciate that very much. I'm going to introduce the guest for today, and then I'm going to ask him about the review before we get into the main content. But first of all, I said guest. Yes, that means I am not alone. There is a man. You're very familiar with him. You're very familiar with his voice. Yes, he indeed sat behind, not this very microphone, but metaphorically this very microphone for a long time. I got to cut my bat pod chops with this gentleman. He is a BOF senior contributor. He is the third Mario brother. He is the incredibly shrinking man. He is Mr. Ryan Haas, and he is back on the program with us. Ryan,
what up?
Welcome back, buddy.
I'm here.
It's so great to have you. We talk all the time.
All the time.
We haven't actually recorded together in a while, so this will be fun. A guy that I also talk with all the time, but I tend to record fairly frequently with, is also here. You know him as a BOF senior contributor. 50% of the Straight Out of Gotham podcast, and the meatball champion of New Jersey, Mr. Peter Vera. Welcome back, Peter.
Hey, boys. I'm really just pumped to get Haas out of the kitchen because I'm tired of getting pictures of those like brownie sandwich things.
I feel like I live in the kitchen these days. Pete will call me and he'll be like, let's FaceTime, and I'll be like, okay. And then he'll be like, you're in the kitchen again. I'm watching a kitchen cooking show.
I mean, dude, you might as well be like Bobby Crocker for all I know.
It's incredible.
Betty's brother.
Okay.
I don't know.
Mario brother and Bobby Crocker.
Yeah.
Dude, Haas, I don't know how you have been able to like continue on your fitness and well-being journey with some of the delicious treats that you are cooking up or picking up from the local places. Like, I envy you, man, because if I had some of the delicious desserts and what have you, I would get diabetes immediately.
It's crazy. Like the more stuff I post is like, I do make more things than just like sweet desserts all the time, but you would not think that. But that's part of the trick is like, you know, research and math and calorie counting has enabled me to make things that are like, that look way worse for you than they actually are. And that's part of the trick. That's part of
I feel like you just eat like carrot sticks and celery all day and then you just have like dessert.
Not be that wrong, Pete.
It doesn't sound that far off.
Full of carrot sticks, but yeah, and at 8 o'clock I'm eating the brownie peanut butter sandwiches. So
yeah.
Well, you guys know, Bill Jett Ramey, to the listener, the editor in chief of Batman on Film. We've been talking about doing a cooking you know, whether it's a vlog or social hour or a podcast or something for a long time.
He's just looking for an excuse to get the pot out again. That's all that is.
The pot. Yeah.
We're talking about gumbo here, not something to enhance your appetite. but those ideas have been kicking up again, listeners. So be on the lookout. We might have a culinary edition of the Batman on Film. I don't know. Pick your poison. Whatever media or venue we'd present that on, coming here quickly. But guys, I mentioned it when I read the review because, you know, we are the initiated here. And I feel like a lot of the listeners, you know, that are downloading this podcast regularly are people that have either, you know, been with the site for a long ride or are, you know, diehard Batman fans that are just looking to consume more Bat content and, you know, maybe have heard of us, but now are just listening. I was surprised to see a review from somebody that's like, hey, I kind of found you guys. I wasn't sure if I'd be into it, but
that's
weird,
right? It's like this is a little website and called Batman on Film. It's not like it's the oldest one that there is, but
or you know, I'm not a Bat super fan, but I liked all the movies as a kid and I've watched them, you know, since then. And then one day, maybe it's the pandemic, right? Maybe it's maybe it's people bored, you know, not a lot to do, and it's like, you know, heck. My kids like Batman now. That reminds me of when I liked Batman. I wonder if there's a podcast about Batman, and away we go. I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, I was surprised to see that one. So thanks, Green Belters. Appreciate you writing in. Hope you enjoy it and stick around for a while. We should have a very exciting year because, you know, hashtag the Batman is coming. And tonight is
damn right.
It's a weird only. At the time that this episode will go live, one calendar year away. So by the time listeners, you are listening to this episode, it will be at least March 4th, 2021. And the official release date as of now, you know, God willing and the crick don't rise, we're talking about March 4th, 2022 for the
premiere.
And
that's significant for a lot of reasons. Because one, not only am I going to be seeing the Batman, but I'm going to be in Texas to eat some gumbo. You know, like that's the plan. Batman and gumbo. I'm going down to the great state of Texas. I'm going to kill two birds with one stone.
Tex-Mex, barbecue, I'm going to eat it all. I'm going to be vaccinated and Chewies, I'm going to be drinking Buc-ies, beers.
Alamo Draft House.
That is what I'm talking about.
We've already got it planned.
And, you know, if any of you all listening would like to get more information, head on over to the website. You know, when there's big motion pictures that are released, we like to try to rally the troops and get together and have some fun. And hopefully, you know, again, God willing, by this time next year, it will be safe to do so.
Yeah.
But
the last one, the last one is open, bro. Texas is open.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We can go there right now.
We're going.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Pew, 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 pew. But you know, if you want to go back to a lovely earlier time when you could see movies and things were less controversial in our society, look no further back than when the Joker movie came out. If you go back and listen to our podcast on that, I think the last time we did a big BOF watch party in New York City, and me and Pete and Eric and all kinds of other amazing folks, Reno, you know,
Reno came down from Montreal.
So we got to watch that together, and boy, it sure seemed like the worst thing in the world was that Joker movie. And then other things happened.
It was terrifying, right? That was going to be the most terrifying thing to happen ever.
It's going to destroy our children. And now look,
turns out it was just fine. But, you know, the world is a crazy place. You know,
it's a funny world we live in.
Right? Wearing masks has been controversial one way or the other, whether it's found masks in a fictional Gotham City or, you know, related to pandemics. But between now and when the movie is released, we here at BOF are going to start a new little series of podcasts, you know, intermixed in with the regular episodes talking about, you know, the stuff we typically talk about, focusing on the characters that we know and are confirmed to be in Matt Reeves, the Batman. And tonight is the first one. It's the first, you know, kind of go we're going to have at it. And Peter and Ryan have joined me to talk about the two-part extraordinaire from Batman the Animated Series, The Cat and the Claw. And yes, that means we are going to be talking about Catwoman, likely a very different iteration of Catwoman. But the idea behind this series is just to kind of take a look at some of the meaningful or significant interpretations of these characters from the past talk about them a little bit, and if possible, you know, think about what that might mean for the character's representation in the upcoming movie. Very speculative, but very fun, right? We got to spend our hours sometime. Yeah. But before we get into that, we're going to get into a little bit of news, and we're going to play a trivia game, because I'd like to see Haas beat Peter at his first go. When it comes to what are you? Well, let's not get there too fast. Let's start with the news.
3, 2, 1.
Cue music.
Becky.
Good evening.
Well, it is the subject matter. It's not Christmas, but it's the gift that keeps on giving, I suppose. It is every day there is a bit more of headlines or posts or something to really get people stirred up and excited. Of course, I'm talking about Zack Snyder's Justice League.
What?
Whoa.
We're still talking about...
yeah. So crazy.
It's the greatest movie that hasn't come out yet.
It's the greatest movie.
But it will.
It will.
We're days away.
Listener, we are recording this on March 3rd. That means we're 15 days roughly away. Might be 14, depending on what time in the morning on the 18th it's released. But today, March 3rd, Wednesday, the 6th, yes, I said 6, chapter titles were released. Peter, you are our resident Zack Snyder super
that
fan.
That laugh says everything.
I'm the BLF Zaddy, boys.
It's so true.
It's true.
It's not it just an true. Act. Every text that Pete sends is...
Oh, dude, I am so far down the Snyder rabbit hole. Like, I can't believe Bill hasn't fired me yet.
People think we're kidding, but it is legit.
I love BBS. Like, you know, screw me. But I like Batman Returns, too, so I can go to hell. But... so, you know, what are you going to do? So we got the 6 parts. I'm about to run them down, tell you part 1.
I've only seen the part 1, which is like, okay, well, don't you dare, Batman. It's something like that. It's
don't count on a Batman. That's okay. Part 1. Part 2 is The Age of Heroes. Part 3 is Beloved Mother, Beloved Son. Part 4, Change Machine. Ooh. Part 5, All the King's Horses. And the final part, Part 6, Something Darker. So these might have a couple different meanings. The part 1 was released, I believe, in the IGN FanFest interview. I think the first 2 parts actually were Don't Count on a Batman. So I'm wondering where that falls. But and then Age of Heroes, we know Wonder Woman says in the trailer. So we kind of have an idea where that falls. But part 3 and part 6, I found kind of interesting. Part 3, I'm thinking Martha Kent, right? That it's got to be some sort of Martha Kent, Clark Kent thing going on there.
Mm-hmm. That was the dear mother, dear son.
Yes.
You know,
beloved mother, beloved son.
That's right. So, Peter, Martha Kent came to me just because of, you know, why'd you say that name? But also, you know, it just makes sense. It's a, you know, whether that, I thought either could be reunion back at the farm, potentially could be in that chapter. But I also then was wondering, like, I wonder if it's a mother box thing. Is this a mother box and Cyborg?
Mother box.
Or is it both? Is this
It could Clark? Be Cyborg and his mother. Remember, Snyder released that picture of Cyborg looking at his family, himself included. So it could be a part. And that's new. We didn't see that in Justice League Whedon. So
You know what it was interesting to me? With the exception, and maybe even with chapter 1. Those titles seem like the track listing for like an alt metal concept album.
Yeah.
Well, change or
it's the same. It's kind of the same deal as like when a soundtrack score album would come out before a movie, and you'd read the track titles, be like in a Star Wars movie, like, okay, Duel of the Fates. Well, that's gonna be at the end where like there's a lightsaber battle. You try to guess what's gonna happen, but I guess the only difference here is like we know what's gonna happen in this movie.
Change Machine is kind of interesting because just like
you know, a Nine Inch Nails song.
Going back to Justice League, like Silas Stone calls the mother box a change engine. I don't know if that's written by Whedon or whatnot, because God knows how much that movie was remade in the 3 months that it was filmed the second time around. But so I'm curious as to where that falls in line. We know something darker. Bruce says that in a lot of the trailers, right? You know, he's, he says it to Diana when he's speaking.
It's probably dark side stuff. Yeah. Darker. I'm sure it dark is. Side. Ooh.
I'm sure. Or maybe, I don't know. I get, maybe it's the right before the final end sequence. I have no idea.
But like, are you going to see these titles pop up in the movie, or if you just play the thing, or is it just going to play?
I think they're broken up. I feel like
there was an announcement that there would be like distinctive break spots within the movie where you could stop. So that's, I've assumed that these now title cards, and especially the way that they were shown, sort of black screen with the wording, my assumption has been that that's how they'll be presented. I was also, Haas, I don't know what you were expecting before this, but I was surprised at six. Six was a shocker for me. I thought probably, you know, in fandom, I remember the coverage saying 4 hour long episodes was the original thought. So I assumed if there was going to be chapters, we'd have four, but.
Well, no, not really. I mean, yeah, it, just because, I think you wouldn't break it up, by timestamp. You would, especially because it's now a full feature. It's just a feature. I think these chapter titles are probably more akin to, you know, movements in the story. Like if you look at the three act structure, it's not, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that happens at the beginning and you have a big, you know, crescendo, then you have the climax and your denouement. So like those last four, five, six might all happen within like the last hour or something, you know, just because of like how the storytelling works. So I wouldn't put too much stock into that at this point. It seems like they probably just, you know, got the full movie and figured out where these things would go.
So maybe more thematically structural than time frame structural.
And that would probably fit within Snyder's MO a little bit more too, but that's just my speculation.
No, it's fun. The speculation is fun. Peter, do you think they will... Do you anticipate within any sort of publicity between now and then there will be a point made to let people know that there are chapters?
Because 100%. Because, first of all, I think the four-hour runtime has been a topic of conversation. I think that's been... Some people have made it out to be a negative and other people are trying to say it's not a big deal. So if you could break this up into, you know, episodes, right? Make it almost kind of episodic in a way.
Parts. Yeah. Like the official Snyder Cut Twitter handle says six parts, one film. Yeah. That's how they're...
I figure that could be a selling point for the people who are saying, hey, look, like this is too long for me. I haven't even watched The Irishman yet. You know, like it's a long movie. So,
well, you don't even have to go all the way to The Irishman. I think something, you know, a genre film, not the same characters, but something to think about. How many millions upon millions upon millions of people watched the Lord of the Rings movies, the theatrical version of the Lord of the Rings movies?
Mm-hmm. I mean, still haven't.
Untold millions. Well, you know, you're a weirdo. You know, you just watched
Star Wars. You literally just watched Star Wars.
So. That's true. I'm very picky with my social media. It's or media. It's just sports and Batman for the most. Sports and superheroes.
So the percentage of people that have watched the extended edition of the Lord of the Rings movies is just a teeny fraction of what people have watched the theatrical edition, right? Mm-hmm. Because runtimes matter. And if people think they've already seen something, now you want to sell them on the 4 hour version of it, that could be tough. So I think the chapter thing.
How long are those Lord of the Rings movies theatrically? Are they like 2.5?
They're two and three.
Return of the King is like a good three.
That's, and then the director's cut are more like 4 hour movies.
They're all at least like 30 minutes plus longer each.
They feel faster, quite honestly. Like, they actually really fly through because it really helps the plot. But anyway, this isn't you know, Hobbits on film. But yeah, I just think it's a fair comparison that a lot fewer people watch the longer thing. So I hope they do. I hope if the goal is to help this make HBO Max an even bigger success and to get as many eyeballs on it as possible, I would think. You know, let people know that there's going to be different chapters and they can watch it bit at a time if that's their pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that's shouldn't be a huge deal here, because like it's on streaming. You can pause whenever you want. It's going to be on HBO Max. We're in the age of streaming. We're in the age of binge watching. We're in the age of a global pandemic where a lot of people don't have much to do. Like we're in a whole new world of streaming. stuff that never ends. So like,
did you just break out in song like Eric Holzman?
Oh, I can sing a clip there, buddy. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a big deal. It's just yet another selling point to this esoteric thing that they will keep having to like try to market. And I, you know, with only a couple weeks out, I don't really, every time somebody from BOF comments on marketing, it seems to kind of rub people the wrong way. But then again, a lot of things that anybody says can be deemed controversial on
the internet
these days. But you know what? Like, I just got an email from HBO Max like yesterday that was like, see what's streaming in March and on HBO Max. And the Snyder Cut wasn't mentioned in that email at all. And it comes out in like 2 weeks. And I'm like, that's what are you all doing? Like, it's really strange. Like,
what shouldn't
there at least be like the hand, even if it's later, it's like, and coming up and, you know, before the end of March, Zack Snyder's Justice League. Like, I have gotten,
and like your neighbor's teenage son told you, Zack Snyder's Justice League.
he might be referred to as a zaddy, but like, yeah, I mean, I've gotten some separate emails of just about the Snyder Cut, but it just seems like it could be, have been, or should be more of a push. I don't know. All I know is that I do want one of those Mother Box burger boxes, but even that like isn't coming out. I can't get that the same.
It comes after the movie, doesn't it?
It's like a month later. Yeah, I want that burger box, man.
Yeah, it's kind of goofy, though. You know, I think a lot of this has been strange. I do think, you know, Snyder has been obviously, you know, masterful at keeping people's attention over the past, you know, couple years, really, at this point. So for the people that have been on the journey, they're going to get this thing. It doesn't matter if it's in chapters. It doesn't matter if they get emails. You know, for those of us that love these characters and maybe didn't love everything about what Snyder was doing with them, we're well aware and we're curious. We're going to check it out, you know, a couple of weeks countdown. And, you know, then it's on, you know, more focus on the Batman and we'll go from there.
Sure. Sure, Garrett.
Sure. We'll see what happens. Hey, yeah, knock on wood.
We're not going to talk about this movie ever again after that day.
No, that, yeah, of course. Yeah. Famous last words. Yeah. Well, you know, I do love talking about Batman, but I also love talking about Superman. And Superman and Lois was renewed in advance. So the second episode of this series didn't even come out yet. And it was already released that the CW was renewing the entire series for a second season. That announcement came out on March 2nd. So, Ryan, I know you've watched the premiere, correct?
Yes, I have watched the premiere, yes.
And Peter, you watched the premiere as well. We've talked about that.
Yes, I did.
But you guys are both behind. You haven't seen episode 2.
No, I have not. I'll watch it tonight.
You should do it because it's awesome.
As soon as we end this podcast, it's the first thing I put on.
Yeah, tonight will be tomorrow by the time we're done. So you'll watch it tomorrow.
Yeah. Especially for you guys on the East Coast, you know, I am not even close to current on Batwoman, but I tell you what,
me and Pete are.
I know you guys are.
Deep cuts on that show.
I am counting the days between episodes of Superman and Lois at this point because it is just that good. You know, the
here's a question for you, Garrett. Like,
yeah.
So you're a Superman guy anyway. Have you talked about this on a show yet? Yeah, you did. You talked about, I listened to it even, so I know things. But like, you as a Superman fan and as a father of many boys, I'm sure like this show probably has to touch on a really like crazy spot for you, right? Like, especially like taking cues from like one of the best Superman runs in modern history, that Tomasi run of Superman.
Peter says it.
Yeah. Superman being a dad, like they've masterfully taken that kind of broad concept and translated it to TV. Even in the one episode I've seen, I'm like, this is, hell yeah, they've got something good here.
And heavy and heartfelt. And I tell you what, man, I could wax poetic about these first two episodes as a Superman fan and as a father for quite some time. There is a line, and it stands out because it really feels like a lot of the emotional weight and center of the character is based on it. And it's from Martha Kent in the first episode that says, like, you know, the most important thing you could do for these boys is to show them the kind, considerate, vulnerable man that you are as a father. And I was just like, oh my gosh, you're like speaking right to my very soul on the way I try to raise my boys, you know? And it is incredibly touching that you have this character And I think the approach is so good because you get to kind of bring your own history with Superman to the show. This in some ways could be, you'd have to, you know, a bunch of headcanon, quote unquote, to get there. But this could be Henry Cavill's Superman. This could be, you know, more headcanon, Christopher Reeve's Superman. It doesn't have to be Supergirl Superman, because it is Clark and Lois at a point in life that most of the audience hasn't seen before. And it is, you know, artfully and reverently done based in sort of like the collected mythos of what we know of Superman without alienating anything, but also while not being generic. And if you can't tell, I freaking love it so far.
You're not the only one. I mean, I haven't seen episode 2 yet, but it's been getting great review, you know, great spoiler-free reviews on Twitter. So I'm very lucky about that.
It's this weird thing where it's like, this kind of show only happens when everybody involved in it has the collective experience of making all of the other Arrowverse shows up until that point. And that's not to say that, like, you've had to have watched all the Arrowverse shows and series up to that point, but it's clear that they've had so much experience making these shows that are trying to, like, both be a CW show and a superhero show and comic book show. But like, this one is, it really feels like just the next launching point of, like, the Arrowverse, because tonally, it looks and feels like a completely different, like, it feels like it should be on, like, a HBO Max. It's, well, not even like a CW, like,
yeah,
compared to, like, Legends of Tomorrow or whatever. It's just completely different, but it's still that same Superman, but they don't, like, make you feel, it's like a good brand new comic book series with, like, a new creative team. They don't, like, you can jump in and you don't miss anything, but it's still enriched if you have watched everything. So it's, well, really, yeah, smartly done.
Like, on a bit of a smaller scale, Berlanti is almost like Feige. You know, Feige, yeah, had to go through how many, sure, bad Marvel movies before he created the MCU, and Berlanti had to go through how many series before he, you know, it's kind of like the culmination of everything he's been doing the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Peter, you're right on with, because that was a thought that I had when I watched the new episode, is that Berlanti has this, As a creative voice, a big part of what's in his voice is this, like, dramatic tension that he brings to everything that he does. And a lot of times on the CW, that has manifest itself in, like, this, you know, modern, the WB, you know, teen drama, soapy, mm-hmm, you know, gosh, Everwood type, whatever all those shows were back in the day, right? In this, the dramatic tension is there, but it's not teen, you know, kind of cheesy soapy stuff. It is like family, you know, interpersonal relationships and, you know, what's it mean to be a brother and what's it mean to be a father? What's it mean to, like, sacrifice for family and how you prioritize and how you spend the time that you have and how that impacts the people around you. And
there's a lot of that Black Lightning too. Like, there's a lot.
Yeah. I've heard that
similarities, mm-hmm, between, mm-hmm, Superman Lois and Black Lightning.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, we're getting more of it. And I think, you know, from almost anyone I've talked to, besides some, you know, goofy things online that want to just say, oh, it's Man of Steel light or something like that. But, you know, it's not Henry Cavill. But I tell you what, if we don't see Henry Cavill again, I'll still be disappointed. This takes the sting of that away because it's, mm-hmm, it's very,
that's a
very
good way to put it. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, guys, the hottest trivia game sweeping the nation, Bat Trivia Game, yeah, is calling on both of you. It is time to stand up and answer the question.
Hoss is in
the What are you? Well, you get your work cut out for you.
I want you to do me a favor. I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
All right, Hoss, I know you listen to the episodes, right? But I'm going to give a rundown, mm-hmm, for the listener, because just, mm-hmm, like Stan Lee says, every comic book could be somebody's first comic book. Every BOF podcast could be somebody's first BOF podcast.
Clearly, based off that review we got.
Right. It's crazy. Great callback, by the way. So this is the game where I give you three clues. These are like normal difficulty clues. They're not giveaways. You're going to have to think a little bit. I've got these guys on camera. You're only hearing them, but I've got them on camera. And we're all under the bad oath to be honest here. So after each clue, I give these guys a chance to raise their hand. When they raise their hand, they let me know that they think they have the answer to the question. We will continue on until either both hands are up or all the clues are given. Now, I said, so the first three clues are regular difficulty. That's because the fourth one is sort of the giveaway. If you don't get it by the time clue four comes around, you don't get to be Batman. You might not even get to be Robin. You are Harold mopping up, you know, a leaky oil stain on the Batcave floor from the Batmobile.
Don't do my boy dirty.
I know. I always love going to Harold because Peter's got such a soft spot in his heart for him. All right, gentlemen, the first clue is also a giveaway. It's just a sort of establishing the terms of the game here. What are you? I am a character associated with the Batman universe. Okay? Bit broad. But these clues are going to give it away, I think, pretty easily. All right. So the first real clue is clue number one. I am a female character that first appeared in 2004. What are you? Okay, clue number two. No hands are up, listeners. This character was created by Teresa Rebick, John Brincato, and Michael Ferris. What are you? These guys are looking at me like I'm crazy, like these are some deep cuts here. Okay. All right, guys, clue number three. This character received enhanced powers and abilities following a mystical resurrection by Egyptian cats. What are you?
God,
I want to let everybody know these guys don't have their hands up. I thought that third clue was practically a giveaway clue. Here is the fourth one. I think they're going to get it on this. This character's feature film was one of Roger Ebert's most hated films and one of the most decorated movies ever at the Razzie Awards.
Oh, okay. I think I know this.
What are you? Okay. Haas started waving first. So your answer's on hold. Peter, you get the chance to go first. What are you? Who is this character?
Is this the Halle Berry Catwoman?
This is Patience Pryce, or Patience Phillips.
Patience Phillips. Yeah.
Yes. The Halle Berry Catwoman. Haas, I know that was your guess as well. Dear listener, the reason I picked this ridiculous character that has only really shown up once, besides a video game, is one, because we're talking about Catwoman tonight for our The Batman featured spotlight character of the episode. And Ryan Haas, you may not know, is a collector of the rarest order.
He's got all the Catwoman cups from McDonald's.
What do you have from this movie here?
Everything.
Oh, well, I got to preface this with saying, like, you know, when Catwoman 2004 came out in 2004, it was the first Batman-related adjacent movie we had since Batman and Robin in 1997. So I was like, well, I've got to support it. You know, I've got to go out there.
Do your part.
Do my part. So I saw the movie in the theater twice, maybe. And
what? You
saw it twice? I sure did. I saw it in the theater twice. I got it.
I brought a date to it.
Me too.
I put my foot on the ground. I did not see this movie. I was like, no way.
No, I saw it twice. Bro. And it, when, you know, and when I found out, I was like, okay, well, you know, it's tangentially related to Batman Returns. Okay, great, you know. But I still haven't seen it. But I got it, and I got all of the video game adaptations. So, like, even the same version on different platforms. So
that
I've got
is the for, most Haas thing I've ever
heard. Yeah. So really I've got is. It for PS2, Xbox, GameCube, game, and Game Boy
Advance. Have you played all the versions?
I have played the Game Boy Advance version, and I have played through and beaten the GameCube. Well, maybe it was the Xbox version.
I was going to say, I think I've seen your shelf. I thought I still saw some plastic wrap on a couple of those.
There probably are. Yeah. So one of the, I think it's the Xbox version that I beat all the way through. Cause at the time it had the best resolution or something. I've got my GameCube for all you super nerds out there. I've got my GameCube modded to work on my PVM over here. So, you know, at some point, maybe I'll have to replay. Cause I remember the game actually not being that bad. You know, so it might be worth, going back to us.
The only thing about this movie that I own is, I bought it within the last 2 years, is I own the comic book adaptation of the film. I've never read it. I've never seen the movie. I just own it because this stuff never comes in. Like, my guy at the comic shop was like, dollar. I'm like, sold.
I've got comic adaptations for all the other movies. I kind of forgot that they're even, and it's a Jim Lee cover too, isn't it?
Yeah, you know that's what? If you're a good boy, I might mail it to you for Christmas.
Ooh,
if I can't come up with a good gift,
maybe make it a straight out of Gotham prize, and maybe I'll have to put my
that's it. I'll con you
hat next month.
I'll cheat to get you to review my podcast.
Yeah, that's the only way I'll get reviews.
Peter, I think, you know, it's worth reminding you at the time, all we had was OnStar commercials and Halle Berry Catwoman. So I gave it one go. It is the only time I've ever watched the movie, though, was that
the OnStar commercials are far superior.
That movie is you got to see it to believe it, really. It is just something else.
But it does connect to Batman Returns.
Correct? It does. It absolutely does.
So it takes place within the Burtonverse.
Right? Technically, yes, it does. Yep.
So maybe Sam Hamm will work it into his Batman 89.
I was just going to say, could Patience Phillips show up in the Batman 89?
She could be another intern at Shrek's department store.
Right. Still, you know, living outside the law, going about her cat business. But anyway, boys, thank you for playing. You both are heralds.
I got two now. I got two.
Yes. You weren't stumped. You got two. It's pretty good. You know, Haas is batting 1,000 here, so you gotta take some more cuts.
I think I'm doing better than Lauer, though.
You are. You got to get Lauer another show so you can't brag on him too much. Anyway, boys, thank you for playing another thrilling edition of What Are You? And with that, we go to the main event, a discussion on Catwoman, as portrayed by Batman the Animated Series, The Cat in the Claw.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move up.
Now, I know the intro music doesn't quite work because that was Batman 66, but, you know, turbines to speed, it feels like we're really revving up to something. And
Batman's Batman, bro.
100%. No one was more revved up for this animated series than a young Garrett Grev.
Would you say you were grevved up?
I was grevved. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah. I mean, now I would. Now that you say it out loud like that, I was super grevved up. I was such a bat. My whole bedroom, guys, Batman. I know this is a
unique, oh my gosh. Right? But
in 1992, my whole bedroom coming out of Batman Returns was Batman and had been, you know. I just got like a new bedding set because there was some new merch for the movies. I remember the curtains that I had. They were white with that black. It was, you know, kind of like the poster or the black symbol on the snow background. It was all that. And every day after this bad boy premiered, when it was, you know, on your after school block of television programs, and then on Saturday mornings, I would have a VCR in the family room and we'd be recording episodes of Batman the Animated Series. And my mind was blown. I remember my brother and I, like, it really felt like every episode was like we were getting a new Batman movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys said.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It felt like that in my bones. Like, I was like, how are we this lucky? How are we this lucky to be alive at this time and be getting this thing? It was just incredible to me. And, you know, The Cat in the Claw was a two-part episode of Batman the Animated Series. It was directed by Kevin Altieri. Altieri, yeah, thank you.
You got to say it like you're Italian, Altieri.
Yeah. Well, you guys know, I live in Minnesota. I need some Jersey in there. Altieri. And Dick Sebast. I don't know if there's an Italian way to say Sebast. But it first aired on September 5th, 1992. And this was actually, I don't know if you guys remember this.
The first aired episode.
It was the first aired episode that wasn't part of the primetime premiere event. Mm-hmm. So on Leather Wings was this, like, I think it was 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock p.m., like special event that premiered, but when the program actually started airing at its regular time slot, this was the one on September 5th. And then there was actually a big gap. So it was produced as
part two is so weird.
Yeah. It made you wait. Like, I think it was 8 weeks. Do you guys remember that? I tried finding this for the show notes.
No, I didn't.
It was like 8 weeks later. They made you wait for it. I want to say it was 8. I've seen it before. But I remember there being a gap, so I don't know. And I'm sure it's on the Wikipedia. I could try probably pull that up while we're talking at some point. But this was the first introduction of Catwoman in the Batman the Animated Series universe. And we are going to be reviewing this version of this Selina and this Catwoman and discussing the episode just a bit in general, and talk about what makes this unique, what makes this special, and any of the other things that you might want to talk about. So with that, you know, we've shared just a little bit of thoughts, but, you know, Peter, where were you, or do you remember watching these two episodes for the first time as a child, or is this something, I know, because you guys are, you know, a few years younger than me, but pretty close to the same age range, but it feels like there's all these, like, your ability to retain memories from when you're, you know, like, what would I have been, 9 versus 5 are wildly different. Do you remember the first time you actually watched this episode, and was it when it first aired, Peter?
I don't remember the first time I watched it, but I remember, like, just animated series alone, like, I remember, like, okay, she looks like Catwoman from the movie, right? As did mm-hmm. Oswald. Like, mm-hmm. Catwoman and Penguin were, you know, it was mandated that they look like the characters from Batman Returns. So, like, it was, like, fresh, and it was fresh, and it just all connected with me. But, yeah, no, I this episode in general is just, as I've rewatched it a few times now, I'm like, man, they just nailed Catwoman, like, from the get-go. You know, creeping up that building, and one of my favorite parts of this show, this episode, is Isis. Like, I love what mm-hmm. Catwoman does with Isis, and how it's actually not really Catwoman committing the theft as much as it is Isis. Like, all Catwoman does is crack open the window, and Isis sneaks in over the lasers, and she steals the necklace, and that's where it all snowballs and starts from there. So that was, like, my favorite part.
Yeah, not only that, but Isis gets to be you know, if you're watching this, you know, the first part of the season premiere or the series premiere, it was really the first, not person, but individual that Batman saves from certain death was the cat Isis. It was about to be run over by a truck. Batman heroically leaps out into the street, saves the cat, and then Catwoman blows a little cat whistle. Yeah, falls in love, blows a little cat whistle, and Isis scoots up a storm drain or a downspout or something. Yeah,
very Tom and Jerry of her.
Yeah, it totally was. And it really sort of just kind of established a lot of the feel for what the animated series would be. Fairly straightforward, obviously a lot of noir influences, but mm-hmm. like could bend the rules of reality a bit to be just a touch cartoonish without going too over the top, but you could have a cat that is a cat, you know, assistant cat burglar and can shimmy up downspouts and things like but that.
The show just, like, towed that line so perfectly throughout. Like, it was the perfect balance, really, of just hyper, just upset, just not even that, but it towed the balance of just being, like, absolutely ridiculous to the point of, like, pretty much serious. And it's great what that creative team was able to get away with for a kid's show. Like, because you could say it's not really a kid's show, but it does have, like, cartoon elements of it that would fall in line with stuff like Looney Tunes and other things.
I mean you're absolutely right, Peter, and I could talk about, you know, my kids, but I talk about my kids on here all the time. Haas, I happen to know for a fact this is a favorite in the Haas household, and your daughter is a huge fan of this one.
Oh my gosh.
Share a little bit about that. And then, since I know this is on repeat all the time, it might be good to start with a general overview of the plot. If you wouldn't mind providing that for us, that would be a delight.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, since we've been in pandemic times, and it's been the perfect opportunity to run through all this bat-related media with my daughter, and, you know, she's become a gigantic fan of this stuff, you know, since she's been introduced to the world, basically. So she's 3 and a half now, but since last March, we have watched the entirety of Batman 66, Teen Titans Go, and the animated series as well. We're on the new Batman Adventures. We're almost done with the new Batman Adventures. And then once we're done with that, we'll move on to Batman Beyond. She's already watched half of Batman Beyond. She pulled it off the shelf one day and got into that for a couple weeks before I was like, okay, yeah, we got to get back to Batman 66. We got to keep the order going here. But on our everyday, because normally, you know, when we sit down for dinner or whatever, it's like, okay, we're watching the the newest episode from the disc. We're watching the Blu-ray, but when it's just the everyday, like, oh, you know, I'm doing something in the kitchen, making brownies or whatever, and she wants to watch Batman, and you know, I'll just pop it in on Vudu or whatever on streaming, she'll ask to watch the Batman Catwoman episodes very frequently. So these two episodes are ones that we've seen quite a bit, and so there's definitely something to them to these episodes that's pretty captivating for a kid like her. And it's obviously gotta be that, like, you know, girl focused, you know, because there's a woman villain and there's Catwoman and Batman. Like, there's a lot of cool elements that I think, you know, have a wide appeal. But like, basically, yeah, I mean, it's a two-parter, so it's got more meat to it than most episodes do. So you've got Batman, you've got Catwoman, cat burglar going around, but then you've got this mysterious Red Claw terrorist that
Gordon thinks must be a dude.
Well, not Gordon, like Batman, everybody does.
Everybody.
Like, they kind of beat you over the head on the episode about, like, we got to find this Red Claw. He's a bad dude. You know,
he's a bad man. So he definitely pees standing up.
Yeah, they like really like play up that, like, they just assume it's a, you know, they refer to it, the person, as a dude. And then when it's revealed that it's a woman, it's like, oh, it's a woman. And then later in part two, when Batman confronts Red Claw for the first time on the train sequence, she's like, you know, it's so memorable. Even as a kid, I remember this. She was like, it's surprising you've met your match, Batman. It's not surprising that it's a woman, you know, but it's like, but he's already met like Catwoman and stuff. But yeah. So then like, these episodes juggle a lot. Like, they introduce Batman and Catwoman, but also Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle.
Bruce and Selina. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the best part of the episode, is that character focus on the duality and relationship between Bruce, Selina, Batman, Catwoman. It's so well done. Like, they definitely took their cues from Batman Returns, but also all the comics, and condensed it and made its own new thing, a new spin on it for the animated series. So other than, it probably is, like, I don't know if this is fortunate or unfortunate, that it probably is the best part one, at least. Part two is not as good as part one, I think, but like, it's probably the best Catwoman focused episodes of the series.
Absolutely.
My second place episode with Catwoman would be, I think it's Catwalk towards the end of the main animated series, that has, it's like a Catwoman ventriloquist episode. And that's something else to note, is like, most of the episodes with Catwoman, you'll notice she's not the only villain, because they always play her up as like an anti-hero. So they comfortable with having her being the only villain, so there always has to be like, oh yeah, Catwoman and Red Claw, or Catwoman and Scarface, or Catwoman and some weird monster person, like
two episodes, like, her whole motivation for kind of everything is to try to, you know, she's kind of like
do the right things with the wrong intention, kind of thing.
Yeah, like, she's trying to save these cats from, you know, this wildlife. She wants to make like a wildlife preserve.
Yeah,
she's bought out by like a corporate conglomerate, and they want to turn into like a resort and stuff.
It's so kind of the
she's always had her own agenda.
Yeah, what's interesting about like this version of Catwoman is, you know, Catwoman has a very like, her origin and motivations change wildly throughout the years, depending on the comic books or the movies or whatever. But the one thing that doesn't really change is how and why she interacts with Batman. And they nailed that in this episode. And in the animated series, they do keep that like animal focused slant to it, which is fine. Like, I kind of doubt we'll see that so much in Reeves' Batman, but and we didn't really see it was an element in Batman Returns, and it wasn't really an element at all, like in Rises and The Dark Knight Rises. But here, you know, like, it kind of works. And like you were talking earlier, Pete, like having the cat partner that does the extra like espionage things for her is a cool touch. And the animation is so great there at the beginning, where you see the reflection in the mirror and the score. I get this probably has some of the best score stuff, score work in any episode. Like it is so that
That's really saying something.
I know it is. That Catwoman theme is so iconic. And your question earlier, I'm rambling here, but your question earlier about like, do I remember seeing this episode specifically? No, but I totally did. I was like 4 when the series premiered in 92. It was 92, wasn't it? Or 93?
Yeah, it was 1992.
92. Yeah. So yeah, I was 4 when it premiered. But like the, I definitely recorded the episodes on VHS. Like I remember recording the Joker's Wild episode. That's the one.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Because I've got that because it was like Fox Action Theater. I've got like all the commercials and stuff there with it and everything. So, and get this, like I just, well, as we were talking, I remember this, like, you know, my daughter loves this episode, but it clear, like my sister loved it too. So much so that she named her cat Isis. She, you know, we each had a
fantastic
cat. My cat was called like, you know,
Koopa.
No. I just called him, my cat was just the Bat Cat. And then that's my funny. Sister's cat, she called her Isis, but after the name of the cat in this Catwoman episode. So clearly we had seen it enough times or for her, just even her to be like, yeah. Yeah. And I think for Halloween that same year, like she was Catwoman and I was Penguin, you know, from Batman Returns. So
it's amazing.
We had, yeah.
You never told me this.
I need to, yeah. I was
find the picture
between, Ryan. Yeah. Between that and you talking earlier here about your bedroom, my bedroom was the same. Like I had like Batman animated series cards and stuff that I like taped on the wall. Like I had, I had those. Bag. I had a Batman Returns sleeping bag. I had, I think, those same bed sheets. Like, I'm going to have to go next time I track down an old photo album. I'm going to have to take some pictures because, man, I've got a few years ago, I posted some Batman things on Batman Day of me, like in the Batman 89, like Power Wheels I had and stuff. But I've got more pictures somewhere of like what my bat room looked like as a kid. And it's probably going to blow some people's minds of like, yeah, that's traditional, like, you know, mid 90s Batman.
Everywhere. Yeah, so man. Like, looking like a JCPenney catalog.
Oh my gosh. It was like,
I would lean towards Sears. Sears is probably my department.
Yeah, I was a Sears guy too. Yeah. And you guys know, I shared some pictures with you and I posted some on my Twitter too. I went back and looked through a 1992 Sears catalog.
Oh my gosh.
Batman like, I had this. Yeah.
Yeah, merch. And I must have had a 93 one too. These were at my mom's house. She still has these catalogs from back in the day, right?
That's great.
I saw a lot of the Batman animated series merch too. It's quite the trip. It made a huge impression.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, you know, Peter, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. You know, Ryan sort of gave us a good look at the plot here. We meet Selina Kyle, who is elegant socialite, you know, blonde haired Selina Kyle. Mm-hmm. That's something that always, you know, stands out to me when I rewatch these episodes, just how specific of a take on Selina this is. Catwoman feels very familiar. Selina feels a bit different from what I'm used to. Mm-hmm. You know, any thoughts or from you or like, what did that feel like for you when you watch these episodes or when you watch it? Getting
for me, like it really, like as a kid, like I said earlier, it really connects to the movie. So like, I feel like, this takes place after Batman Returns. It's just the scene where Bruce is almost being auctioned off and then he meets Selina for the first time and he's in awe. Like it almost reminds me of the ballroom scene.
The aloof, like, yeah.
Just slightly different in how like Bruce kind of like falls for her there. And like, you know, the whole like mistletoe scene in Returns, it gives me like the same kind of vibe as I watch it now. And I'm just like, wow, like this is, I can't believe how like mature in a sense it is, you know, it really kind of like, it plays to the both sides, like Hoss said before, like Bruce Wayne is kind of loofy, but then Batman is so stoic and stern, you know, and it's really cool. And then it leads you into like one of the greatest Batman car chase. It's not even a car chase, just action sequences really of all good. Time. You know, these guys are shooting Tommy guns at cars. He hops on top and then he batarangs the wheel so that the car flips over. And then it leads you to a really great scene with Batman and Gordon, which is like one of the most definitive Batman and Gordon moments ever. Like Gordon's like, go get those guys. They're dangerous. And then he like walks out in front of an alley, just stands right out in front. Batman creeps up from behind him.
Comes out from the darkness.
They have a conversation, not looking at each other. And then Batman grapnels away. Like
he's gone.
I was like, that's what I want in a movie. I don't ever want Batman and Gordon to ever meet face to face. I want them to talk like back of head, you know, like something like that.
Well, and even the way that that scene starts is just pitch perfect too, where it's like Bruce Wayne is aloof and is like, oh, I'm delighted. You know, I have to, you know,
he's smitten,
but then they're like, oh yeah, we'll have to do that. And then they look away and they're like, oh, look, there's something going on outside. And then they look back and they're like, hey, where'd he go? And then boom, he's Batman. And there's no score in that either. So to me, that made me think the vibe to me was like the trailer for 89, like that original trailer where it's just like clips where there's no score. It's like, what do you do for a living? Boom. And it just like cuts to Batman. It's like that same kind of vibe. It doesn't seem like that was intentional, but it does seem like it was intentional to not have music and just let the scene play out. And that's kind of something that I don't think that you would see a lot of in animated shows like of that era. They normally would be overproduced or have too much music and to get you hyped up, but like this is where they just kind of let the storytelling play out. And it's just
fantastic. This was on the air the same time as the Animaniacs was on the air, right? Like loud and ridiculous, like 90s kind of bratty.
A lot of the same people working on those shows.
Yeah, like, both Warner Brothers projects.
Absolutely. Well, Haas, I was going to ask you, you know, obviously we've got a specific take on Selina Kyle. I was curious here, and this is where whenever I say this, I use a goofy voice because I don't like the term, but headcanon. But when you think about this Selina Kyle, this is a wealthy socialite. She has her assistant. She has plenty of money to try to buy land.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get the feel that this was like, started from the bottom, now we're here, Selina? Or was this Selina that's been born into wealth and luxury and, you know, just has this affinity for cats and burglary out of boredom or something?
It seems like the way that this, you can extrapolate that from this episode, really, especially when you get to the part where it's like, oh yeah, I know piano because, you know, mom gave me piano lessons as a kid. So like it already like shows like, oh yeah, I had a mom and she taught me and I got piano lessons and stuff.
This wasn't Frank Miller's Selina is what you're
saying. Exactly. Yeah. Like there's enough context clues in the episode to kind of show that. Not that they couldn't retcon it if they wanted to, but they never really go back and do any of that in the series really. So
Peter, I agree with you. I think, you know, for me, when I watched it, again, being like, you know, I think Haas maybe 4 or 5 years older than you, like 4 years older than Peter, 3 years older than Peter, somewhere there. And I remember being a kid and being like, wait a minute, she was a secretary. You know, no offense to secretaries, but she wasn't a wealthy socialite. Like, I really thought this was like the continued adventures of.
Yeah, I didn't connect those dots as a kid.
Oh, I was, you know, I was like nine.
I think even at that time, I've mentioned this before, is like, I already knew, like, this is a different thing because, you know, I knew this was different than the movie and that was different than Batman 66. But I watched all three of those things at the same time. But I knew, like, oh, this is a different Batman. This is a different Batman. This is a different Batman.
It was just close enough for me that it was like, kind of this. Yeah, I think it's supposed to be that. I didn't know how to like frame up the idea of like a spiritual successor. So, you know, it was always sort of like, oh, well, this is different. That's a little bit different.
It's like, and I said, Batman's Batman. Like to me, I was just like, I just wanted Batman. I didn't really care. You know, like I remember watching 66 with my mom on like Nick at Night, you know? So like, that's not 89, that's not Returns, and this isn't nearly as dark as those two movies, so it's just give me my cape and cowl and I'm good, you know, like I could care less. You know, we were talking about like Infinite and Frontier earlier and all the universes and everything, and I'm just like, just give me stories. I don't care what universe or what it's in. I mean,
you know, you look at Batman 66 itself, three cat women, you know, like three of them.
And
they're all equally great, so it's like it doesn't matter.
Well, I tell you, you know, it's interesting because like where we're all, you're just,
we're going to have to get Jeff Johns to explain how in the hell there's three cat women.
Yeah. How's that work? The three cat women can be his follow-up to three Jokers.
I would love if he did that.
I, you know, as a kid, you know, it's the same way. I just want more Batman. And my son, Christian is 6 now. He was probably 5 when they first started watching the animated series. He was like your daughter, Haas, where he wanted to watch the Catwoman episodes. Those were his jam. And these two in particular. And my oldest, Michael, would like kind of make fun of him. He's like, Christian likes Catwoman so much. It's like his favorite character. I think he's in love with her. And
that's so funny.
Which one is like kind of adorable. And, you know, when I was a kid watching the 60s Batman, you know, Catwoman in that series sort of like awoken something in a young Garrett Graff that Fury I didn't
stirrings
know.
My utility yes. belt.
Yes, that I did not know was there. Absolutely. And this is animated, so it's a bit different, but he's like such a big fan. And he wanted to know right away, like, do are Batman and Catwoman like boyfriend and girlfriend? I said, well, it's really interesting, man, because if you look at this episode, and this kind of gets to what you guys are saying earlier, this Catwoman has a different, there's a little bit of a different power dynamic with Bruce versus Batman. You have Bruce, who is like in love or in lust with Selina Kyle. Selina Kyle, who is actually Catwoman, for the most part, unbeknownst to Bruce, who is in love with Batman. And Batman, who looks down on the criminal doings of Catwoman, while in fact being Bruce, who is in lust or love or whatever with Selina Kyle. So you have this like love, not triangle, but a love square. Only there's only really two different people involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the tangled webs we weave.
Right.
Yeah. Until there's some right. mistletoe and to get you to, you know, close.
It can be deadly if you eat it.
Peter, we brought up the fact that, you know, this Catwoman has a real sort of animal rights activist push to the interpretation. You know, that's not something that that comes to my mind as being prevalent in a lot of other media or other stories. There's always an affinity for cats, but being like sort of an environmental activist, animal rights type character doesn't ring a bell for me. You read more. I know you've been digging through your back issues, and you're a bit more well-read comic-wise than I am. I'll give you that, even though you're not good at trivia. Does that portrayal strike true to anything else, or is this as unique as I kind of feel like it is?
I'm pretty sure that's like a fresh spin. I mean, you know, and the show is, you know, privy to doing that. Like, Isis is pretty much a fresh idea for the show. She's never really had like a cat, you know, an animal sidekick before. You know, she's had like in other incarnations of the character, she's always been privy to like like almost like, you know, air quotes, adopting people, younger people, and teaching them the craft of
theft.
That's
a good point.
Holly Robinson.
Keeping them safe, right? Kind of a protective character. Well, just kind of like,
yeah, protecting your area, protecting the streets, keeping out for what's yours, you know, watching out for everyone's your back, you know, like protecting your quote-unquote family. Ron V's Catwoman is doing something similar right now. But the whole environmental aspect, I feel, is pretty new. I don't know what 90s purple Catwoman, she was she definitely wasn't worried about the animals. She was, you know, but she's always been, still at her heart, except for Batman Returns, she's always been a criminal. You know, she's always been a thief first for the most part, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, regardless of the Catwoman motivation,
Burton's Catwoman was just solely after revenge. She wasn't, which might be the oddest portrayal of the character, as much as I love that portrayal.
You know, I don't love Batman Returns. I did as a kid, and as it's one that's soured on me a bit over the years. I always watch it because, one, you know, it's a classic at this point, and it's a big part of my childhood. And I'd actually like to review that clearly, because we are getting an Oswald Cobblepot in the Batman. We're getting a Selina Kyle in the Batman. So that will be on a future edition of this Road to the Batman podcast series. But the aspect of the violent nature of Catwoman, I think, is something that is sort of core to the character in a lot of ways, in a lot of interpretations. This is a character that is often willing to go to greater extremes when it comes to violence to accomplish their goals, whether they're, you know, outright criminal or, you know, otherwise, than Batman is. Like, willing to be a bit more brutal, willing to be a bit more sadistic even. We didn't see any of that in this episode, did we, Haas? Like, is there any hint of that whatsoever? And would there have been room for it in an animated series if I'm right and it wasn't actually there already.
I mean, I think you see more of it as the episodes go on. Maybe you see more of it, like, because we recently got to the, I don't know, the new Batman Adventures episode where it's got Catwoman trying to recruit Nightwing. You know, she's moved on from Batman. She tries to recruit Nightwing to be a partner in crime. And then surprise, surprise, you know, she was out for herself the whole time. Like, you know, so it kind of comes out a little bit more there where she's less of a love interest and kind of more of a in it for herself kind of thief kind of thing. She can turn on a dime a little bit more in that version of the series. So
she is a bit more villainous. I was going to interject to say Christian is not in love with that. My now 6-year-old is not in love with that version of Catwoman. That is in my household known as white face, black suit Catwoman. And we do not tolerate white face, black suit Catwoman in this house. On HBO Max. I love that design. Oh, they are not fans whatsoever. It's gray suit all the way, just like in the middle era of Batman Catwoman. That's the one the boys are into. But yet, you know, so I think you're right, Haas. Even if I think through, you know, going on to the Tiger episode, sort of like the Island of Dr. Monroe type.
Yeah, they episode. Keep She's the a bit
more same violent there too.
Yeah, but in terms of her interaction, like with Batman and stuff, they keep it pretty smooth throughout the whole thing. Like it's like, she's, you know, she's out to do her own thing, but it's still illegal. But you know, there's somebody out there doing worse things than what she's trying to do, and so Batman has to be caught in the middle and kind of, you know, be the one that has to clean up everybody's mess at the end. That's kind of like the rinse and repeat Batman and Catwoman's, you know, episodes, you know, for the most part throughout the whole series.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, you see this character, you know, utilize weaponry to be violent, just a teeny teensy bit. Peter, I think you were talking when we were before getting ready to hit play. Catwoman spends a lot of time in oversized air ducts and like ventilation shafts in this episode. And there is a particularly mustachioed henchman that gets on the pointy end of some of her weaponry. And I think, does she actually draw blood? She throws the little cat shape, you know, what do you call them? They're like sharp, jumping jacks type things.
Yeah, those things. I don't know what they're called.
Cat traps,
something like that. Yeah, that's however you... There's probably an Italian way to pronounce those as well. But is that as violent as things get in this episode from either Batman or Robin? I know there's some gunfire from the Red Claw gang. There's a
couple explosions, you know, but I mean...
Yeah, the explosions and the guns have got to be like...
That's about it. But yeah, I mean, she's almost very spy-like in this two-parter, you know, like... you know, she kicks off, you know, stealing that necklace in the beginning of the show. And then her whole motivation is to, you know, find out what, whatever that, I forget what the name of that company is, what they're doing with the actual land. Cause you know, it's kind of
Multigon.
Multigon. Like she's like, it's in the middle of nowhere. It's pointless. It's only good for cats. And then, you know, she's like, what are they up to?
So we'll take care of the cats one way or another.
Nice. Another evil mustache guy.
Oh, there's so many mustaches in these episodes. Yeah. It's really pretty funny.
But like, did you guys, when you guys are watching this, like, aren't you, when you see Red Claw, you're kind of like, I'm getting like Talia vibes from you, you know, like like, she's got that whole, like, you know, I don't want to say cult, what's it called, like, just, I don't know, leader vibe to her, and she's that tough individual, and I'm like,
doesn't take any nonsense.
Yeah, I was kind of like, why didn't they just use is Red Claw an original creation for this show? Like, I wonder why they didn't use Talia to begin with. Like, could they not get the rights to that character or something? I don't know. It's very interesting to me.
And did they want to introduce, you know, Ra's first?
Maybe they had a larger plan, right? Because in the series, they do introduce Talia first in other episodes, and they slowly introduce her, and you don't really know who she is. And then eventually, they get to Ra's al Ghul. So they do kind of
have good point, Haas. You're right.
Some cool continuity with that. So,
well, you know, Catwoman a lot of times is projected as depicted is the word I was just struggling to find. Depicted as a loner. Right. A lot of times, sometimes bringing on reluctantly, you know, whether it's a young girl working a dangerous corner or something like that, or helping some other people down on their luck as well. But it's sort of this like against the grain, against her sort of instinct. In here, she has Selena Kyle has an assistant named Maven. Throughout the two episodes, eventually leaves because they find out that the Red Claw terrorist organization was after both of them, and she's left alone again. I don't remember her in the next series sort of getting a sidekick outside of Isis, who returns. Is this where she stays more of that sort of loner character for the rest of the animated portrayals, or am I missing something from a previous upcoming episode chronology wise?
I was with you. I was kind of like, I was like, oh yeah, Maven. I remember Maven from these two shows, and I'm trying to figure out where her first and last appearance was. I'm looking it up right now.
If Maven ever comes back,
you know, Maven is
Scratch Fever.
Yeah, Maven is in the next one. Yeah,
but I don't think she makes an appearance in the New Adventures. I think this is it.
Right.
Which I thought was kind of cool to have her like almost have like a legitimate sidekick, right? Like she has a business partner or whatever, but, and she knows Selena's Catwoman. It's not like Selena's hiding this from her. Mm-hmm. Like, she changes in front of Maven. Maven knows she's doing all these illegal activities.
It's like, don't mind me, just putting on my going out suit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then it's a kind of interesting extra wrinkle they do have. Like, you know, everybody knows she's Catwoman. Bruce Wayne knows she's Catwoman.
The police know she's Catwoman. Don't put on the outfit again.
Yeah, so you know, it's the whole thing of like, well, she's got to be Catwoman to solve something or fix something. Kind of like Batman, but you know, without the go ahead from the police. So that's kind of a cool angle that they kind of get later on.
I like that. I do like that. Well, in you know, in the relationship to Batman, so important. You know, we talked about, you know, sort of the love square and the charity auction. I think she pays up like, I don't know, 10 G's or something for the date with Bruce. And then Bruce is sort of the one that's chasing her for the rest of the two episodes after she initially says she's going to pony up the money and does. But at the end of this, you know, Batman and Catwoman have been through this big adventure. They fought terrorists. They've done the whole thing. Batman doesn't want her to be arrested, you know, like a common street thug or a common criminal, and instead kind of takes a moment with her separately. And Catwoman asks him, like, do you care or not? And he says, you know, of course I do. And I think it's at that point she leans in for a kiss. And old Batman, he doesn't kiss her. He takes the opportunity to slap the bat cuffs on her and says, like, I think it's more than you'll ever know or more than you can ever know or something like that. And it sort of is that sets up this will they, won't they. You know, they might have had a quick smooch at some point earlier in the episode, but it kind of sets up that moonlighting-esque, you know, are these two going to get together or will they always be at each other's throat, so to speak? And, you know, for an introduction to the character, even in the second part, I thought that was a nice way to establish, you know, what that relationship looks like while still, you know, clearly giving you there's some feelings behind the goings on. I think, like, all these things, I bring these up to sort of, you know, ask the question here. Said the point of having these conversations is to be a bit speculative. Is there anything, Peter, as we discussed it, that you think in this portrayal of Selena and Catwoman that you could see making sense in Matt Reeves' feature live action motion picture, The Batman? Give me, if you'd start with, what do you think actually could make the jump into that portrayal, if you would be so kind?
I think the kind of like socialite facade of Selena Kyle could be interesting, you know? Whereas, you know, she plays, because it could almost mirror Batman, you know, like she plays up this persona in the public to throw people off that she is actually this really incredible cat burglar. Mm-hmm. You know, I would find that interesting. Do I think Reeves is going to do that? No, I don't think Reeves will do anything like that. But I think it could work in that world. I think it's a very grounded world. And if it could work for Batman, why couldn't it work for Catwoman?
Yeah. And we, you know, you've seen there's some stills. I hesitate to say whether they were official or if they were maybe illicit or not, But I think we've seen her in some fancier outfits, I believe attending a funeral, which is why I think maybe those weren't, you know, sanctioned WB picks, where she seems to be a bit dressed up as if she were, you know, a socialite, whether or not she is on the come up from a rougher background or not, you know.
Or if they go the route of some of the other, you know, Loeb cell stories, like, is she related to, you know, Falcone at all?
Falcone, the secret daughter or whatever.
Right, yeah.
I mean, or they could do kind of something similar to what Nolan did, where she just kind of is acting, you know. She's there at that ballroom in Rises, just to, I don't know.
Oh, but we wouldn't want people to say that he's Reeves is copying Nolan did. Oh
God, yeah, God forbid.
Nolan did it first. Remember Burton did it first.
But it's cool. Let's just steal direct lines in A Dark Knight Returns.
Finger did it first.
Yep, Finger did it first, man.
No point in making any more stories, you know.
Yeah.
Haas, anything that you've seen in these episodes that you feel like, hey, this could translate, this would make sense in a...
I think the thing that I'm most interested, that I was surprised to see develop so well and would definitely want to show up in the movie, is that, and I think the other films have done a good job of this too, is just that Catwoman brings out a side of Bruce Wayne and Batman that you do not see in any other context. Like, even in these episodes, the way that Bruce Wayne like acts and reacts to Selina Kyle, you don't see. It's so refreshing and interesting and different compared to the way you see Batman behave and operate in pretty much any other circumstance. Like, you see freaking Bruce Wayne blush. That's
a great point.
You don't see that otherwise, you know. And
you don't even see it with other female characters.
Like, I was gonna say, exactly. Thank you, Peter. Because it's not a male female thing. It is a character thing.
Exactly. It's
not that this Bruce gets all, you know, tongue tied and kind of like, ooh boy, I like the cut of your
this is the dude. This is woman. The dude that's used to being the fake socialite playboy, and then he interacts with Selina Kyle and like she's clearly different because it throws him off. Both
Roxy Rocket has never got Batman smitten.
Oh man, that was so good. But like, it throws Selina Kyle is the person that throws off Bruce Wayne and Batman. Yep. And you know, seeing Batman get like tripped up is like a thrill sometimes, because like you're used to Batman being the stoic like expert badass, but to see him like, that's what that feels like, you know. It's fun,
right?
And we already have seen a little bit of that, like in some of the brief shots we've gotten in that first trailer for the Batman, and I just can't wait to see more of that interaction between the two of them.
That's why that dynamic is so great, because it's just no other character, like you said, no other character does what, you know, what Selina Kyle Catwoman does to Bruce Wayne Batman. It's such a fresh thing to see on screen, on paper, in animation. Like, and it always seems to work no matter what iteration, you know. It worked in Rises, it worked amazing. In Batman Returns, it works amazing. Mm-hmm. In 66, it worked amazing. And
it's always like the best part of the, like, yeah, like whenever the stories happen, it's like, oh, this was good.
So. It's like, while Talia might love Bruce Wayne Batman the most, more than anyone else, like his counterpart, his significant other is always Selina Kyle.
Yeah, she does it like such a creep, though. It's hard, you know, like she's
let me drug you and rape you and then have your child.
My beloved. Yeah. I, you know, for me, it's a bit on along those same lines. I think what I think I could see translate into the Batman, while we're going down the road to the Batman, is that dynamic of Batman and Catwoman finding themselves on the same side of a fight, but not the same side of the law. Or, you know, they become people that end up having a common enemy or working against a common cause while not truly being partners and still being having a bit of being at odds between the two of them. With, I mean,
Matt,
right?
Shrek Bane. Yeah.
Yeah. That is, you know, it stops short of being a sidekick. There's a little bit of antagonistic vibe there, but there's a whole heap and bunch of attraction that, you know, I would say, like this episode, doesn't get, clearly, given that it's animated on Fox Kids, consummated might be the wrong word for it, but doesn't ever, you know, cross that line to being you know, in your face, romantically fulfilled. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Haas, let's start with you. What do you straight up see not making the jump from animation to the Batman?
The pet cat and the secretary and the constant reminder that she's a woman. Like I think that's going to be
a little on the nose.
It's a little on the nose, which makes sense for the time it was made and the audience there. But I think it's just going to be inherent like to the character and a little bit more, that's what I'm looking for. A little bit more finesse, and subtlety here, in
ham fisted.
Yeah, like, I mean, which is only, like, it's progress, and it's a movie, and it's earnest. Like, it's, Reeves' movie is going to be this cool, like, blend of old and new and propelling the characters forward and taking them at their essence. I mean, we've gotten all that. We're gleaming that from what we've seen already. That's pretty apparent. That's what we're going to get. And so, yeah, so, like, I think it's just going to, it's going to take a lot of those elements and cherry pick the best things of them because those are the things that have made the characters endure this long already. You know, like if you go back, even Tom King's, not even, but especially like Tom King's Batman Catwoman stuff, like it plays off of the Batman Catwoman dynamic that has been present since 1940. And there are reasons why that has lasted so long. So I think Matt Reeves appears to be smart enough to know that, like, pick those things and let those things happen, but tell a good story too, and then and that's that will suffice for what you know, just tell a good story. And I think that he'll use that character effectively. So
fingers crossed, man. He's a good storyteller. Yeah, I would hope so. Peter, what stands out to you? You just don't see it happening.
I don't think she's going to be this animal rights activist.
I
think she's looking out for her and herself. I think it'll be kind of more in line with what Frank Miller will give us without her being a prostitute. Just kind of like that street person, just living every day, got to pay the bills. You know, I got to do this to pay my rent. You know, I don't think she'll be like the socialite.
Like a female Aladdin.
Yeah, sure.
It's a second Aladdin reference of the night. I love it.
Yeah, definitely.
Street cat.
I think she will definitely be a criminal.
Them. Oh, God. Oh, man. I was like, who did the first Aladdin reference? I was like, oh, it was me.
It was you.
Yeah.
You got two.
Aladdin on the brain.
You did your own callback, my friend.
I love the live action remake they did, by the way. I thought it was great.
It is pretty good.
It is pretty good, man.
And I'm with Deadshot
himself.
Yeah. And Jafar. And Jafar was cast in, what was it? Was it Black Adam? He's cast in something. I forget what it was. It just slipped my mind. Yeah. The guy who played Jafar was just cast in a DC movie. I'm going to Google it, but he was.
That happens at least once a show. We reference something we don't have right in front of us. It makes for great radio. Yeah,
notice that.
Well, guys, I'm with both of you. I think you nailed it on the stuff that doesn't make it over. I doubt we see Maven. I doubt she's an animal rights activist. I doubt we see Isis. I bet she has a pet cat at some point. And I doubt she is a big environmentalist. But who knows? Peter, I tend to believe she is probably a bit of a cross of The Long Halloween and Frank Miller's. I think she will have established herself with some money. I think she probably's got a rough background. Maybe she has had to make some compromises similar to Anne Hathaway's Catwoman. Who knows? Who knows? Mm-hmm. But we will, this won't be our last Catwoman-centric.
We should do a Catman episode.
He's not, what if we just speculate that he's in the Batman? Like, throw it in there, man. See if people notice.
And it was Black Adam. So Marwan Kenzari, he was cast in Black Adam.
Cool. It's Peter, so I doubt that's how it's pronounced, but good for him. We will revisit Catwoman again in at least one or two more of her other iterations on the road. Because the Batman is coming. All right, guys, we have had a very nice conversation. Why don't you, Mr. Ryan Haas, let the kind folks who have missed your lovely voice on this podcast know where they can find you and interact with you and all that fun stuff. What do you have to tell them about?
Yeah, so allegedly I'm on Twitter sometimes these days, and you can find me there at SMB_Ryan. Of course, the SMB stands for the Super Mario Brothers Movie Archive, which has its own fantastic Twitter handle at SMB Movie, We are always tweeting stuff about that darned old 1993 Super Mario Brothers movie. And if you thought we ran out of content, boy, you're wrong. It's just like the Snyder Cut. It just doesn't stop. And we've been doing it for longer. So check them out. And of course, Garrett mentioned the good old Batman Podcast Network, which has just been exploding so much lately that I can hardly keep track of it. But that's what's great about it, is because you can just follow that Twitter handle at BatPod Network. And that's just basically me retweeting all the cool stuff that everybody else is doing, like this show, like Straight Outta Gotham, like the Batman Book Club, and Everyone Loves a Drake, like all of us in the Batman Podcast Network family. There's just so much good content coming out right now. And just trying to promote it the best I can. So check it out.
Love it. Thank you, Ryan. Pleasure to have you back, my friend.
Yeah.
Peter, you are one of the best plug men I've ever heard in my entire life.
That's not true. I just told
you. Yeah. But
He's so used to it, though.
The sheer volume of stuff you have to let the listeners know about and the eloquence at which you deliver it is just really top, especially for a Jersey guy, man. Like, you're just so well-spoken.
I don't talk like this, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. You really get it out there real nice.
Forget about it.
What do you got to tell the people?
You can follow me on social media. That's Twitter, Instagram, and Zack Snyder's favorite, Vero, at Pete Illustrated. You could follow the podcast that I co-host with the champion of Long Island, Eric Holzman, Straight Out of Gotham, at @straight_O_G on both Twitter and Instagram. You could follow our Facebook page, Straight Out of Gotham. You can join our Facebook group, Straight Out of Gotham. You can read my reviews of Detective Comics, Dark Detective, and Man Bat on batmanonfilm.com. You can check out my toy reviews for McFarlane Toys. Mattel action figures and Mafex action figures on Batman on Film YouTube. I've got interviews with Michael Uslan, James Tucker, Tara Strong, Ray Griffin, all on Batman on Film's YouTube page. And just interact with me on Twitter. Let's talk the talk, let's have some fun, and we'll see what happens with this Snyder Cut movie.
Thank you, guys. For me, I would love to keep the conversation going. You don't have to wait just in between podcasts to hear my thoughts or the thoughts of the guys here. If you'd be so kind, give me a follow on Twitter at Garrett Wato. That is at GARRETWATO. And if we would also, just be real swell of you to rate and review the podcast. It helps us know what you like, and it helps us get more prevalent on search engines, the rumor has it. And if there's anything you'd like to hear about or any questions you'd like to send in, you can do that by emailing me at garrett.grev@batman-on-film.com. That's garrett.grev@batmanonfilm.com. And remember, dear listeners, it's not who you are underneath. It's what you do that defines you. Thank you for listening.
You have been listening to the official podcast of the one and only Batman on Film website. On Twitter, follow BOF at Batman on Film and the Batman Podcast Network at BatPod Network. For Jet and everyone at Batman on Film, I'm announcer Rachel. Thanks for listening to the authoritative, definitive, the original Batman on Film.